Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to your post-match Raw on Anfield Index Pro, podcasting to you from here in my field in beautiful rural Ireland. I'm Trev Downey, and joining me to give their immediate reactions to the frankly horrific Liverpool 0, Atalanta 3 in the Europa League quarter-final first leg from Anfield, no less, are Dave Hendrick and Harry Sethi. I might be a little bit, to use the term raw yet, Dave, but I have this feeling that that is as bad as anything capitulation-wise as we saw in the Rodgers era. It just felt gutless. Mm. It was entirely unprofessional, and it had a sort of a half-arsed attitude to it, which I've seen many people whose opinions I respect dress up as arrogance, and I think that's absolutely fine by way of interpretation, but it just, the whole thing was so disjointed. And here's my thing, that the word I kept coming back to, and I think it's the ultimate indictment of a performance of this iteration under Klopp, it's unprofessional. It was fucking unprofessional.
It was disgraceful. It was absolutely disgraceful. And I'm not sure I could be more annoyed right now. I've had a whale of an evening, Trev. Let me tell you about my evening, right? To set the scene for before the game, it's about 7:05, and I'm looking out the upstairs window at the pissings of rain. And in my gate come trotting a ewe and two lambs. So I think, well, this is new. This is exciting. I'll go out and get rid of them. So out I go to get rid of them. And as I'm going out, a girl comes through the gate, and I'm like, are you looking for some sheep? Because I think I have your sheep in my back garden. So I say, you go stand on the road. I'll run the sheep up to you. We'll get the sheep going back up the hill up towards your house. She does what all teenagers do and walks very slowly up the drive. The sheep go out, turn right, and head off down the road, heading in the general direction of the main road. So I'm like, well, I can't just let them wander onto the main road, so I may go after them. So I spent an hour walking around trying to catch these sheep with this entire family who turned up, who I know, walking across fields, clambering over hedges and ditches and fences, trying to catch these poxy sheep before having to give up and come home. So I come home soaked to the skin, right? My runners destroyed, socks destroyed, trousers destroyed, the whole shebang. But I think to myself, you know what? It's okay. Because Jurgen's Reds are playing now.
Yeah.
And that's going to cheer me up. And then what happened was I had my eyeballs assaulted for 90 minutes by a spineless, gutless, unprofessional performance. And I had my ears assaulted by Steve McManaman, who might just about edge Danny Murphy and Danny Mills for the dumbest man who talks about football in a paid capacity. So all of that comes together. So you can imagine now how my mood is right now. That was a disgrace. Like, it was a disgrace. That's in all likelihood now, that's the last European home game of Jurgen Klopp's tenure.
Yeah.
And that is what the players put forward. And it wasn't just the players. The crowd was shit. Now, the players didn't give them anything to make a bunch of noise for.
Oh, yes, I was told that.
But at times, it's up to the crowd to get the players going. Particularly pre-match, when, according to two mates of mine who were there tonight, it was like a morgue. And then into the second half, when we really needed something to find something from somewhere, the crowd was just mute. Absolutely mute. Again, 95% of it is on the players. But for the fans that went, this man stood in the dugout while he had his trousers pulled down and his arse spanked by the fella in the other dugout tonight. He has given you so many great European memories. And you couldn't reward him with one last effort, one last push, one last cathedral of noise. You couldn't do it. Other people wanted to make it about themselves, of course. So there is that factor. But all in all, a complete shit show. And huge credit must go to Atalanta. Their fans never stopped making noise. Their team was brilliantly set up, brilliantly organized, and made us look. You mentioned the Rodgers era. Remember in that 14-15 season, once Suarez had left and he wasn't there to carry the mediocrity that was around him anymore, we had no identity, no way of playing, no style, no real idea. And in between, like, through matches, we'd cycle through four and five different ways of playing. Tonight, we had no identity, no idea, no tactical plan, no way of playing. We were kicking long balls up at 6'4" centre-backs and hoping for the best. Is what we were doing. And they were eating up every second ball.
Yeah, I'm delighted that we started with a beautiful pastoral metaphor for the clusterfuck that was to follow. And Harry, I'm hoping that you haven't had quite such an appalling lead up to this evening, but no doubt you're as bent out of shape as the two of us. Your immediate take on it, just before we get into it, and just fair warning to those of you who are listening live, by the way, God bless you. Look at you there. Look at that list of people who are listening live. Remarkable humans. And also fair play to you if you're tuning into this podcast, because I think, you know, I get told regularly, oh, I won't be listening to Ron. I get that, you know, whatever. But we probably will dispense with some of the formality of the show here, because there's a lot of there are a lot of feelings that we need to express. Harry, yours.
Yes, unlike Dave, I didn't have to deal with two lambs coming into my backyard prior to the game. There were a couple Arsenal fans, a couple foxes just roaming around there, but nothing out of the ordinary, I assure you. That's what it's always like. And I find it hard to argue. Dave said there, in terms of the words he's using, you know, just before we went live, we were talking about, well, all trying to find different adjectives, really, weren't we, to describe that performance. Unprofessional is one of them. I think disgraceful is another one. For me, I would reiterate that one that you mentioned, Trev, on the arrogance point of view. I feel, you know, we've seen great use of the squad this season, and players come in and perform and really help us out in tricky situations. So you have confidence in lots of these players, but yeah, you know, a lot of these players are really struggling for rhythm, or have come back from, you know, some long layoffs here. I felt to make that number of changes to the lineup that I'm sure we might talk about before diving into the game was was an arrogant decision to make. Yes, Atalanta actually weren't playing too well prior to this game necessarily, but you know, I think it's a European quarterfinal. They certainly treated it like a European quarterfinal. Their fans certainly did. And I felt like that was setting a bad tone from the off, to be honest, to leave that many of our, you know, our first team on the bench. Now, there are, you know, there are those who are already talking, and of course, Cy Brundish is one of them, about, you know, is it enforced rotation because of, you know, a need to do it because of the fact that we flogged these lads all season trying to win everything. Is that coming back to bite us now? I'm sure there'll be many different takes on it. But I felt that was arrogant from the off. And I also think that, you know, whilst I've understood all the arguments made around the desire to protest the increase in prices, I think I can understand those arguments. Absolutely. I have to say, it doesn't really sit well with me that tonight was an appropriate moment to choose to make that point. Easy to say now, and I'm sure plenty of people will say, well, you can say that now because it's been a negative result, but even that is a little bit arrogant in my view, in terms of sort of like, it dampens the atmosphere from the off. It's a strange atmosphere as the game goes on. The atmosphere is just very damp. Like, yes, we always have those arguments about who needs to inspire who. You know, do the players need to be doing something worthy of getting that reception, or, you know, in moments, can the crowd lift the players? And I think in this season, we've seen a number of games where Liverpool perhaps have been up against it and the Anfield crowd has responded. I'm thinking of some second halves against unlikely opponents who are causing us trouble. Luton Town, for example, at home. I was at that game. First half was poor. You know, there's a real rotated side of barely any first team regulars in that side in an attacking sense. The crowd shows up for the second half and tries to lift the team. I felt it was poor tonight in that instance as well. And then finally, I think that the point that, you know, we have to acknowledge the opponents. You know, they turned up for a European quarterfinal. It's important to them. They won one trophy in their, I think it's one major trophy in their history, I think was what I heard tonight. And I thought it was a tactical, like a masterclass in terms of the approach, intense approach. Once they smelled blood, you could see that they realized the opportunity that was there for them. And I thought they were outstanding tonight from very early on till right at the end. They did not let up. And I think if we're honest, you know, plenty of people will go into that second leg thinking, well, the game is, you know, it's 3-0 down. It's incredibly difficult to turn that around. I think it could easily have been 4 or 5 tonight if it wasn't for some good saves from Kelleher and some last-ditch tackles. But yeah, Trev, I think it's shambolic, is another word we can roll out of the dictionary to describe it. And I have to say, to put in that level of performance, as Dave was mentioning, for you, what could be Jürgen's last European game at Anfield, I think it's disgraceful, really. And but that's not letting him off as well. I think he did make mistakes that unfortunately set the tone.
Yeah, I want to lean into that with you just before we get any further. That's probably the one thing that we should pick out there. Sure. From what you said there in terms of the arrogant approach. We've seen that word used a lot online. Yeah. Over the course of the evening. First thing to be said is that the team appears to have been available some 6 hours before kickoff.
Gotta stop doing that. Yeah, it's just,
so I'm really not sure what that's about, but that in and of itself is a reminder of the bad old days. I don't like that shit. I don't understand why that was what it was. Regardless, that's a thing. That's a separate thing. Just to get what you meant about that, and, you know, by the way, just, you are right. An awful lot of people will be looking at this thing, and even the whatever they are, TNT or whatever they are, lot were revoking, you know, comebacks and Liverpool comebacks and all. Sure. The rest of it. But it does have, and there's no more, like, for an ancient fucker, there is no more starry-eyed Liverpool fan than me. I am the original hope merchant. But even the Make Us Dream crew are going to surely have to accept that this is now turned into a monstrous task. Because if you are going to go and pick a country and a certain type of football that you didn't want to have to go and overturn and score goals and all the rest of it, it would be a solid Italian outfit under a canny tactical maestro. Anyway,
to try and inject a little bit of early optimism into this, all we have to do is what we did last time we went to Atalanta and win 5-0.
Yes, of course. That's all we have to do. You're right.
Easy business, obviously.
Talk to me around the concept of the selection there, Harry, before. And Dave, I'm going to bring you in at the end of this, and then we'll go to a quick word on Atalanta, you and I, because I know you've looked ahead to that with Carl. So just in terms of what you're saying there, Harry, in terms of the maybe cavalier approach to the team selection, or how much do we have to weigh that against the idea, well, if there was a game you are going to have a little bit of confidence about in this next run, it would be a home tie at this stage. So where were you landing in terms of which particular selections had your eyebrows raising a little bit?
Yeah, and I think it's one where I'm sure people could easily argue with me about this, because we have seen a number of these players put in great performances this season, and you know, not be unprofessional by any stretch, but I thought a strange time to rotate Robertson. Yes, I appreciate he's coming back from a pretty long layoff, but and has actually been in better form of late, and one of the players who I think emerged with credit from some of these recent games, especially the United game that was actually a little bit disappointing, or not a little bit, it was hugely disappointing. He emerged with credit in my view. So to put Tsimikas in for this game felt slightly strange. Kanate, I understood it, but also slightly concerned around the fact that, in my view, the rotation for centre-back should be, now that Kanate is back, Kanate in for the league, Kwanzaa in for these games. So that had me slightly trepidatious, to be honest, that he was going to pick up a knock, or you know, that he won't suddenly appear on the weekend. Gomez at right back, Gomez at full back, Gomez in any position for the vast majority of this season has been absolutely fine. I think we weren't to have guessed that he would throw in one of his all-time, I think, stinkers, a career stinker performance that he did tonight, but I can understand that one. Jones in midfield again. As I'm going through it, I can sort of I can rationalize it to myself. It just felt like too many changes all at once, to be honest. And I think that maybe it was confirmation bias with some of the early lack of fluidity, some of the poor passing, players not seeming to know exactly where each other would be. Again, then Elliot comes in again. He's multiple good performances off the bench. Still have questions, to be honest, about how effective he is from the off. Gakpo, again, you can make arguments for it. You know, he's had recent positive cameos. Looked to be a bit more intense. He's not playing in a position that's weird for him. That's the position he's been playing before he was even signed. But again, another change. You're weakening your front three. You're weakening your attack in a European quarterfinal, where you want to maybe start with your strongest side, try and get a few goals ahead, maybe, and then you can do that kind of rotation to get these players rhythm. Maybe that's how I, in my mind, would have gone about it. And the last one, I mean, Nunes playing is not really much of a surprise, but we'll come on to talk about his performances of late, but. You can see, Trevor, as I'm going through it there, I'm almost trying to put up a shield for myself and my take early on, because you can rationalize it, but it just felt like a few changes too many, and like a decision to leave so many of our first teamers. Yes, a couple of them are coming back from long layoffs on the bench for a game like this. Yeah, it just didn't sit right with me.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit libertyshield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Dave, the one that really jumps out at me is bringing in Tsimikas at left back when Joe Gomez has been our second, our go-to left back when Robbo's not in, and dropping the likes of Bradley seems a bit strange in that situation when he's a young lad who has energy, and if you don't want to play him in the league game, then that's fine. But that was the weird one for me, and as it panned out, I think Joe may have had his worst outing in a Liverpool shirt on the back of that. That's not wisdom after the event. That just is just an interesting thing that happened. Dave, if you want to talk about anything around the Liverpool team selection, please do. But then would you just have a quick word, nothing in depth, because we don't need it. We can talk about it maybe in the second leg or whatever. But just about this shape and tactical setup of the Atalanta side this evening. What was it that worked for them that we weren't able to get our heads around?
So myself and Carol both picked Gomez to start at right back, but we thought Robbo would start at left back.
Yeah.
Because we did think Bradley might get this game off and then start against Palace, who often have issues tracking opposition fullbacks. So with an attack-minded fullback like Conor Bradley, you could maybe get some joy against Palace and thus maybe rest him in this one.
Yeah.
And obviously, look, he's picked the available goalkeeper, he's picked the best centre-back pairing, like you guys have both mentioned. I was a little bit surprised it wasn't Kwanzaa. I wonder, we've talked about this before, Ibu has one, well, he's a couple of shared traits with Mamadou Sakho. He can look a little bit awkward, a little bit gangly at times. But the other trait is, whenever Ibu comes back off a layoff, he often has a poor first game. And I wonder, was Jurgen trying to get that out of the way rather than have it happen in a league match, which is why he started tonight. But he was shocking. Like, he was atrocious. Gomez was abysmal. Probably his worst showing of the year. Costas was shite. Kelleher was shite. I thought Virgil was okay. Not good, but okay. Like, he's not at fault for any of the three goals. I thought of the defensive line, he's about the only one that comes out as okay. Not good, but okay. But the midfield didn't work at all, which is weird because a lot of people have been clamoring for that midfield. You know, when Jones is back, it'll be Alexis, Endo and Jones, and we'll have great control in midfield. And they couldn't get any control at all tonight. Part of it was they kept running into blind alleys, kept overhitting simple passes. It just didn't work. Endo was very poor. I thought Jones was poor. Alexis was okay. Again, not good, but not bad. But again, like, the front three, you're making two changes there. So you're changing both fullback spots and you're changing one in midfield and then two in the attack.
You've also taken a huge amount of pace out of the team.
That's the thing. I mean, Cody Gakpo has no pace over the first 5 yards. It takes him time to get moving. People are trying to make out he was our best player tonight. I thought he was shit. I thought Darwin was somewhere between poor and shit, probably closer to shit. And Harvey, like, if that shot goes in, maybe the night works out differently. But when it didn't, it seemed to scramble his head a little bit. Like, the thing with Harvey is he's been brilliant off the bench for us. Really, really good. Really impactful against tired defences. But when he starts, other than when he starts against the Dross, he does tend to just not quite be able to have the same type of impact. on them, I was a little bit surprised by their lineup. Now, I wasn't aware that Kolasinac was out. So him being out means two of their back three are missing. It also means Daroon has to move from midfield back into the centre-back line. So you've now changed your centre midfield. Zaba Costa is not the normal starter at right wing back. But the front three, we weren't sure if it would be Scamacca or Luckman. We thought he might go for Luckman's pace, just given the opportunities to counterattack. Instead, they were a bit more direct in their counters and played up to Scamacca and then had runners moving off him. What hurt us was Koopmeiners and De Ketelier played off the back of Endo, in front of our centre-backs, behind our midfield, and our midfield never caught on to it, and the manager never caught on to it. The fix would have been to pull Joe Gomez from right-back into midfield and form a box midfield to go up against their box. The problem in doing that is when they have wing-backs and one of your full-backs has to come in narrow to basically form that box midfield, you're then asking your wingers to track back. And Ruggeri is a lot quicker than Harvey Elliott, and Cody has all the awareness of a beauty queen when it comes to tracking runners. So Zaba Costa and Ruggeri just had all the freedom of Anfield to run up and down all night. When we did try and stymie the midfield, but we didn't stymie it enough. We didn't do it often enough. Joe stayed wide. Costa stayed wide. So we left Virgil and Ibu sat against Scamacca, and they sat De Ketelier and Koopmeiners behind Endo. So they basically had a 3v2 advantage against us almost the entire time, unless Endo was aware enough to drop. But even then, it was still 3v3. And the size advantage, the power advantage was with them, because they're all 6'3 or bigger. We had more speed than them, but they had more power than us because of Koopmeiners running from midfield. Ederson was running from midfield. Pasalic was running from midfield, and nobody was tracking him. Gasperini has absolutely mugged Klopp tonight. Absolutely mugged him off. Jurgen found no answer to what they were doing. Like, they're playing largely the same way they were playing 5, 6, 7 years ago, where they build in triangles and diamonds. And what I mean by that is you've got your left side centre back, your left wing back, and your left side midfielder, plus one of the floating attacking midfielders shifting wide and building through triangles or diamonds. They've been doing this for years, and we didn't catch on that this is what they were doing at all. It's almost like we had no idea how they were going to play when they're a really good footballing side. Like, they're an average team in the great grand scheme of things. They're sixth in Serie A and they're in bad form, but they are a good footballing side. Like, they're well drilled, well organized. They've clearly spent time on this build up play, and we acted like we had no idea who they were and hadn't seen this before.
Yeah, and something about that, I'm listening to you saying it, and it makes perfect sense to me, but something about that even makes it a little bit more annoying, because if we do the sums on it, we play out where they are in Serie A, we do some sort of wild extrapolations and work out where that would mean they would be in the Premier League. Maybe it's not that far away, actually, from the level they would be in the Premier League, but I just feel as if they were made to look a whole damn sight better than they were. Yes, they were absolutely technically and tactically turned on. And yes, they took advantage of our sloppiness in a way that must have surprised them even. But it just feels as if they are certainly not a team that should be beating any iteration of Liverpool 3-0 at home. And it comes back, I think, almost entirely to the lack of performance that we saw from lads in red shirts. And the nature of the game itself is such that the details of it as we go through it are quite brief. And we will obviously go off in various diversions when we get distracted by how awful a certain person was or a player was or whatever. But look, everybody is going to want us to address the thing, and I don't want us to take, can I just say this at the start, I think we won't make ourselves hostages to fortune here in terms of this debate around the flags and the atmosphere and all the rest of it. The two things can exist separately. There's no doubt that one has an impact on the other. To say anything other than that is completely disingenuous and probably exposes an ideological stance. If you are talking about whether or not it is absolutely the right of people to make the point around about ticket prices and how it affects ordinary people and work that through, then I think that's the most valid argument in the world. I understand it. There is a bang of sanctimony of some people who are talking about this in a way that I don't think they have necessarily a right to. If you are a local person from the area and you're talking about it because, you know, you have experience of being a young lad trying to get through and remember what it was and wanting young people to be able to do it, or even if you understand that inherently and you're talking about it, that's fine. But I don't think there's a need for sanctimony on either side of this argument.
On either side is the key there, Trev.
There's no need.
There's a lot of it on both sides.
There's a lot of it on both sides. There's literally no point. People coming out and saying, "Oh, it was those protesters ruined the fucking atmosphere in Jurgen's last night in Europe." That's as short-sighted as people saying, "Well, it had no effect whatsoever, and it's absolutely the right, and this is what we wanted." You know, let's not get lost in the ideology. The right was there. Harry made the point earlier on that I think is entirely valid about whether or not this is necessarily the correct game to do it. Maybe it was the quickest game, and therefore that's what made the impression. Overall, in the bigger scheme of things, the lack of flags does not make people not be able to use their fucking voices. Let's remember that. Let's talk about that aspect of things. And when I say the atmosphere at Anfield was shite, I understand I'm seeing it coming through the telly, but I've been lucky enough to be part of several fantastic Anfield atmospheres this year. Harry flagged them up earlier on. So let's talk about the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is, yes, I know we are supposed to have a group of players who will inspire the fans. But again, well articulated, I think, by both of you earlier on, it's also incumbent upon the fans. And by the way, I've also seen those same people with that same ideological stance spin it around and talk about how it's absolutely your responsibility to cheer and to clap, and that's your job as a supporter. So, you know, the point is there. It's a valid point. Maybe when the team is so hopeless, it would have been nice to see some sort of rallying thing. And I think what you said earlier on, Dave, is if for no other reason, do it for Klopp. If for no other reason, because this is, we are, regardless of what anyone thinks, we are riding a wave of fucking emotion. My fear is that we are now starting to crash on the downside of that wave a little bit before the finish line. That's my big fear. I think tonight you could read it, if you wanted to be pessimistic, as the very embodiment of that, a sort of it's like the after party. We're down, it's flat, everybody's going home. It's a little bit like that. I hope that's not the case. I hope we can rally. But we have to understand that the emotion is a huge, huge part of it. And that's what was a little bit missing, both from the performance on the pitch and also from the evocation coming from the stands. And listen, that's just balance. We can talk about all things. They're valid. We don't have to take any big, deep ideological stance and hate everybody else like some absolute imbeciles are doing on Twitter. And yes, that means you if you're listening. Stop it. There's no need for that shit. We're all supposed to be supporting this club together. We're all supposed to be part of the same bigger collective. There is still a thing to be won. This one, because of the ineptitude of the team tonight, it's fucking almost impossible at this stage. And that stings.
Just on this, so you've mentioned the wave of emotion. Liverpool have won 3 of their last 7 games. Those wins were against Sparta Prague, Sheffield United and Brighton. One of those teams is a weak European opponent. One is one of the worst teams in Premier League history. And the other is Brighton, who are out of form, not playing very well. No clean sheet in our last 8 games. And as Matt Ladson of This Is Anfield put it, it's a last dance that's turning into a marathon runner being overtaken in the final stretch. It's that marathon runner who's kicked and gone too early. That's what we feel like right now. Like Jurgen made his announcement and this surge came behind us. and we were able to overcome a lot of adversity with injuries, with, you know, refereeing decisions going against us in big moments and big games.
Late winners. It felt miraculous.
Late winners. It did. It felt almost scripted and written. But it's never scripted and written in football. It can't be. It's unpredictable at its very best. And it feels now like all that's catching up to us. Now, the only hope we have is that Jota is back, Trent is back, Ali's coming back, and maybe having those players back can give this team the legs, the heart to get over the line in the Premier League. Because as things stand right now, we're out of this competition. And I'd actually be in favour of sending the other 21s for the second leg and saying, you know what, fuck it. But then we're putting all of our eggs in one basket on the Premier League. And what happens if we don't win that and we end up with just the League Cup?
Yeah.
Like, no matter what anybody says, if this season, which when Jurgen made his announcement, looked like a possible quadruple, if this season ends with just the League Cup, that is going to be crushingly disappointing for all of us. And anyone saying it's not is lying to themselves. And anyone who tries to cheer and support another league title where we fall short and miss out by a point, they can get to fuck. I'm sick of losing out by a point. I'm sick of losing finals. That's not what this club is about. This club is about winning. And right now, we don't look like we're capable of winning the two pots we have left. And tonight doesn't help in terms of the atmosphere. And I fully agree with you. The flags not being there do not stop people making noise. The sanctimony on both sides does wind me up. And that's what I meant earlier when I was saying that people are trying to make it about themselves. It's people on both sides. It's not just one or the other. It's people on both sides. And it's not the majority of people. It's a handful that want to make it seem like they're more important or they've got more to say. Some people, and you referenced them, have no right to say anything about this. It doesn't affect them at all. Some people, it does affect. Some people will make out it affects them more than it actually does. And, you know, there's no right or wrong in this. But what really annoys me is the people that say, the people on one side saying, oh, you've ruined, it's your fault we lost the game because you didn't bring the flags. They're wrong. It's not their fault that the game was lost. But also the people on the side of the protest saying, well, Klopp agrees with us. No, he doesn't. He didn't agree with you. He said he would prefer it not to happen. So assuming that the manager agrees with you on something that he has fairly clearly said he understood but didn't agree with, like that type of thing, that type of sanctimony, well, the manager agrees with it. Fuck off. No, he doesn't. Stop putting words in his mouth and speaking on his behalf. Bad enough some people want to speak on behalf of all the fans, again, on both sides. But don't drag the manager into this. You've let the manager down tonight if you're in that stadium. Not just fans. Again, 95% of players. They all let the manager down tonight. And he didn't help himself. He had a shit night as well. But like it was his last year. It's his last European home game unless we get a miracle in Bergamo, which I wouldn't put past this team. But right now, we don't look capable of beating anybody.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again anfieldindexpro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.